All right, so let me just quickly introduce the call. I want to welcome everyone who's on the call to this APN briefing featuring, now on the phone, renowned Israeli journalist Akiva Eldar. My name is Lara Friedman. I'm the Director of Policy and Government Relations for Americans for Peace Now. When we originally scheduled this call last week, the topic was Israel going to early elections. Obviously, things have changed since then, and Akiva is going to give us his insights about these changes and what they portend. I also want to encourage people to check out the APN website, www.peacenow.org, for information and analysis from APN on this topic and on pretty much every other topic you can think of related to Israel and the quest for peace and security in the Middle East. My guess is that most people on the call know Akiva, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time on introduction. Akiva is the chief political correspondent and editorial writer for Haaretz, Israel's leading newspaper. He is a veteran political commentator and the co-author of a book called Lords of the Land, which is the definitive critical study of Israeli settlements. He is also one of the wisest people I have ever met working on these issues. Today's call is going to go like this, and this is actually, I think, going to be news for Akiva. I am going to pose a number of questions to Akiva. We're sort of going to have a conversation here. He can answer my questions, or if he prefers, he can pivot off my question to say what he actually thinks I should have asked him about. That's fine. We'll do that for about 15 or 20 minutes, and then I'll open up the line to questions. At that time, I'll give people instructions on how to ask a question. Until then, everyone except for Akiva and myself are in a listen-only mode, and please do be advised that this call is being recorded. So let's get started. Akiva, the first thing I want to ask you, I'm going to be very candid, what the hell happened this week? I went to bed over the weekend thinking about early elections in Israel, talking to people I knew about that, and woke up Monday morning to find out that the ground had shifted. So can you tell all of us what happened?
Well, good evening, good morning, or good afternoon to everyone, and thanks, Laura, for the introduction. I think that this... is one of what we call the Israeli media's Yom Kippur. People, it's not only you, Laura, you're in a very good company, but some people are on record offering their analysis why Netanyahu is so eager to call for early elections and what is his motivation and how it will end up and what was behind it. And many of them would like, if it's just online on the website, they can remove it, but some people are willing to eat their own papers to make sure that nobody will hold it against them. So this was a surprise to everyone, including all members of Knesset, both from Likud and Kadima. What happened actually between or when you went to sleep and you woke up, because of the time difference, is the Supreme Court ruling. And actually, it's Peace Now and Yasdin and the other peace organizations, so-called the Fifth Column, as well as people like me, who are responsible for that, because Netanyahu realized that by July 1st, he will have to make a very crucial decision that may be very expensive, which is to remove this new neighborhood in Beit El. Actually, it's not new already. It has been there for 10 years, as well as Migron. That there are people and organizations in Israel that are not willing to come to terms with this moral of stealing land, let alone expanding what they consider as legal settlements. But in this case of Migron and the Ultanine Beit El, these cases were too difficult for Netanyahu to handle. He also realized that when he participated in the Likud conference, that he's got a kind of like a tea party in the Likud that is also too difficult to handle. So when he realized that Kadima is for sale and that Mufaz can be bought, you get 28 members of Knesset for one minister, this is the best deal in town, so why not? This looks, if I was Netanyahu, I would also grab this opportunity and make sure that I have another year and a half in power. And, we can talk about the American angle. When he goes to the White House, he will be followed by another 93 members of Knesset from both Likud and Kadima, which is considered quite moderate, if not some of them are even dovish politicians.
Okay, so I understand the explanation you've given for why Bibi would jump at this opportunity to broaden his coalition, give himself some cover as some difficult stuff is coming up. What about Mofaz? I mean, I've seen this quoted all over. On March 3rd, Mofaz said, and this is a quote, "Listen up, I won't join Bibi's government, not today, not tomorrow, and not after I had Kadima on March 28th. This is a bad and failed government, and Kadima, under my leadership, will replace it in the next elections. Is that clear enough?" And that seems pretty clear. So why did Mofaz go for this, and why did he, I mean, you used the word sell. In that sense, why did he sell Kadima so cheaply?
Well, because if
I'm sorry, Akiva,
you
can
look
you
at
also,
the alternative.
So you said one ministry. Can you explain what Kadima got out of this coalition agreement?
Well, first of all, before we go into this, it is very likely that if he goes ahead with Netanyahu's policy on the peace process and I don't know if you're aware of the fact that they have deadline for amending the electoral law and with the conscription of Orthodox, but there is nothing, no deadline, and nothing specific about the peace process. And as you know, there are about at least half a dozen members of Kadima who are active even. One of them, Nido Vesaza, is active with the Geneva Accord. Orit Zuaret and Doron Avital have participated in, and Shlomo Mula, in J Street conferences. So the latest news is that they need 7 members and they're looking for another 2 to form a new party and to split because they, Laura, are not able to offer a decent answer to your question. They have a problem looking at the mirror when they wake up in the morning and ask themselves or face their children and offer them a decent explanation. Or, as Zahava Galon said, it gives bad name to opportunism, what happened with Mofaz. But, you know, this is not the first time that Mofaz is flip-flopping. I still remember maybe you and our colleagues remember that before joining Kadima, one day before he jumped on the wagon of Sharon, he said, "The Likud is my home, and home is something that you don't leave." I was not surprised. Actually, I can tell you that Tzipi Livni told me a few weeks before the Kadima primaries that she is willing to bet that this is what will happen. And actually, she told me yesterday that she said, "How would I look like if I had taken Mofaz's offer to be his number 2. I would find myself now with Netanyahu after 3 years that I didn't want to hear about the this invitation and this option of joining the Likud as the leader of Kadima, I would find myself now as a member of Netanyahu's coalition, and not even what she could have gotten before, which is a foreign minister and maybe even rotating with Netanyahu.
Okay, so you said before, I mean, clearly it doesn't look like peace is a top priority for this new government, which may or may not be an issue. I've read a lot about the focus that this new government is going to have on the changing of the electoral law and on dealing with the ultra-Orthodox conscription issue. But your starting point, which is the Supreme Court decision, which is basically going to force government action one way or the other on settlements by July 1st, does seem to make, you know, whether or not Mofaz or Bibi want it to be, this is going to be a front and center issue, issues related to the Palestinians, related to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. How do you see that playing out as we get close to July, which is not far away?
Well, this can also explain why Netanyahu decided to stick to this government and to this Knesset rather than going for elections, because by dissolving the Knesset, the 18th Knesset, the only option to stop the Supreme Court is by passing new legislation that will overrule the Supreme Court. And if the Knesset has been dissolved, the only way to do this is by a government initiative. Now what he can do, and there is this option, that a group of members of Knesset will initiate that and they will pass legislation. Because, you know, there are two options to pass a new bill. One is a government initiative, and the other one is a private initiative of members of, we call it private initiative, that members of Knesset are putting forward to the Knesset. And now, with simple majority, they can do this, and they can also pass the Minister of Justice, Nehman, legislation that gives 65 members of the Knesset the power also to overrule the Supreme Court, any Supreme Court ruling. So now this is actually going to be the ultimate test of Kadima, because how can you at the same time speak about improving the electoral system, improving the Israeli democratic culture, and at the same time to undermine and to provoke the Supreme Court? What kind of message are you sending the Israeli people? Actually, you know, this the story of Migron and the Ultra, these cases are proving the point that we have been making for so many years, that the occupation is corrupting Israel. And this is, I think, the ultimate corruption, is trying to overrule and to embarrass the Supreme Court. And as you know, it's not Dorit Beinish anymore that was accused of being a leftist. Now it's Asher Gounis, who is the president, that, you know, this this coalition has amended the procedure of electing the president of Supreme Court to make sure that he will be the president. So it will be very difficult for them to accuse him of being a traitor and being an agent of peace now.
Right. Well, I mean, and what you're saying also ties into something which my colleague Ori Neer wrote about a few days ago. Ruby Rivlin from Likud, who is the Speaker of the Knesset, has, I guess, on Tuesday expressed some concerns about what it would mean to have this broad a coalition in government, such a small opposition in the Knesset, and I think suggested this actually could be very, very dangerous for Israel's parliamentary system. I think he said that he thought it could break down within weeks. or it could degenerate within weeks. I mean, what do you think of that? How does this play for the stability of the system itself?
I think that, you know, Rubio Rivlin was, he's a Democrat. He is really, you know, a Jabotinsky kind of a respected revisionist. But what it will also lead to, I think it will find a way to legitimize the occupation and, in other words, the apartheid. Because I don't believe in a two-state solution. It won't be two states. It will be Israel, as Peter Beinart has suggested. It will be democratic Israel and a non-democratic Israel. And this is what to happen, and this is where they're leading. It is, the same Ruby Rivlin has suggested that we would rather have a binational state than another partition plan and withdrawing from the occupied territory. So I have a problem with Rivlin, but he's absolutely right. I know that Yair Lapid, the new Israeli political star, visited the United States recently, but he said, and it was recorded, he said that Kadima made a mistake, and he will not repeat this mistake, by not joining the government. He said a politician should always aim to be part of the government and the coalition, and I'm not going into politics to be the opposition. So actually, this kind of the fashion of unity government, which didn't start today. I want to remind you that Labour and Likud were rotating in the 80s. Shimon Peres was sitting next to Yitzhak Shamir for a few years. The same people like Fuad Ben-Eliezer, who are accusing Kadima for joining the government, did the same. They were, even the Labour Party was sitting in the government next to Lieberman.
Absolutely.
So there is a lot of hypocrisy that you have to be very, very careful to use some filters and to go back to the 80s and 90s to find out that they have not invented this. Just have to imagine that it's equal to the Republicans and the Democrats in the United States forming a unity government after the elections. But in Israel, this has become a very normal and legitimate option, that after the elections you form a unity government right, left, and center.
All right, so this has all been very enlightening and a little depressing, but fascinating. I am now going to open it up to questions. If people don't have questions, I have plenty more. So if people can hold on one moment while I change the mode of the call, and then I will give people instructions. So bear with me. Okay. So we are now in Q&A mode. If you want to ask a question, you need to press *6. If lots of people jump in at once, I will select someone to ask a question. But people can go ahead, and I ask that you do please identify yourself. And again, remember that this call is being recorded. So if someone wants to go ahead with the first question. I heard somebody pushing buttons. Anybody there?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, I've got two people, so somebody go first.
Marty Bressel will go first.
Okay, Marty, you go ahead.
Akiva, threat or the suggestion that they will allow a bill to legalize the two settlements that are under court order to be demolished seems to me to bode ill for the future insofar as our issues are concerned. Could you share your thoughts with us on that subject?
No, can you repeat, because it was cutting out?
Can
you repeat the question?
As I understand it, there's a bill to legalize the trees that will open up neighborhood and be gone, despite the Supreme Court's
yes.
order to remove them. That is the first thing that we seem to see coming out of this new coalition, which it seems to me bodes is a very bad signal for our issues. That there will be no change in the government's position, no change as a result of Kadima's joint government. Do you share that view? Could you give us your insights into that situation?
Yeah, I think that I just saw on Haaretz website that the new minister Mufaz was invited to another round of discussion in the cabinet how to resolve this problem. Now, I think that even calling for such a discussion is desecrating the Supreme Court and the rule of the law and justice. So I just want to believe that even from Mufaz there are certain red lines, and this is one of them. And it's not Mufaz. There will be members of Kadima that will stop him from doing this and will not be ready to legitimize this kind of legislation. But now, everything is possible. The Israeli public doesn't care too much about this. You see people taking to the streets for the price of cottage cheese or of housing. But you don't see, you see the usual suspects, few hundred people that are willing to demonstrate and sign petitions when it comes to the settlements or the peace process. So this is one angle of looking at it. The other thing is where is the United States. We know that once the American administration decides to put a red line, for instance, in the case of E1, this huge area between Ma'ale Adomim and Jerusalem, and the message to Israel is clear that this is something that the United States will not tolerate, Israel refrains from going forward, from moving forward and building another settlement or expanding the settlement of Ma'ale Adomim. So if the message from Obama would be, listen, I cannot turn a blind eye to overruling the Supreme Court when it comes to actually a robbery of private land from other people and legitimizing it, and then complaining that there is a campaign to delegitimize Israel and ask Obama to defend Israel in the UN and human rights in other international organizations. So I really expect the international community, and first and foremost President Obama, to put his foot and say, this is something that I'm not willing to tolerate.
Thanks, Akiva.
Thank you.
We have another question.
This is Frank Bamberger. I'm wondering what kind of a peace this new coalition, if at all, is going to promote, try and achieve. Do you think they'll do nothing till November 2013? Nothing in this cycle? And only even think about that till after? Or how do you see this playing out?
Actually, I was asking myself the same question today. and I'm speculating now. Mofaz put forward his peace plan, which is suggesting to start with transferring 60% of the West Bank, which means 20% of Area C. As you know, now they control Area A and partially Area B, but Israel controls a little bit more than 60% of the West Bank, which is Area C. So transferring them additional 20%, so the Palestinians will control 60% of the West Bank. Mofaz also part of his plan that is that at the end of the process, at the last stage, the Palestinians will receive from Israel territories that will be in size. Their size will be equivalent to the size of the West Bank and, of course, Gaza. Netanyahu may accept it, but will insist that before we start the negotiations, the Palestinians will agree that the terms of reference of the negotiations will include that the result of the negotiations will be Palestinian recognition of Israel as a Jewish state or a state of the Jewish people. And, of course, never dividing Jerusalem. And, of course, the Palestinians will reject it. And this will allow Mofaz and Kadima to wash their hands, and the Israeli public will feel very comfortable with it and say, you see, the Palestinians never miss an opportunity to miss an opportunity. And more people will move from Meretz and Labor to the right because they will be brainwashed again that the Palestinians will insist on the right of return, because Netanyahu said it clearly. He said they refuse to recognize Israel as the state of the Jewish people because they want to bring 7 million refugees to Israel.
Thanks, Akiva. Do we have another question?
Yes, I was on the phone.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Phil Horn. You started off by asking a question about the agreement including a change of electoral system and universal military service, and I don't believe I heard an answer to that.
Yeah, I said that this is, I believe that Mofaz was looking for a popular agenda, something that most Israelis that are relevant to Kadima, of course, his constituency, will be happy with this. There is a consensus in Israel over the need to amend the electoral system, that the threshold is too low, and we need changes because it doesn't work. Most people don't really know the details and are not interested in the details, but people want a change. They want, they will support something that promises them something new. And the other thing is this consensus over, as you said, the universal conscription system in Israel. Is also this became a kind of a front runner for item issue for most of the secular or all of the secular parties, because this is motherhood and apple pie. So for Mofaz, this was a no lose situation. This he got a deadline for that, so he could actually ignore the peace process. He could ignore the Arab Peace Initiative. He could ignore the issue of settlements. He didn't even insist that Netanyahu will guarantee that he will follow the Supreme Court ruling and remove the illegal outposts. So he took the obvious issues, which is also actually he grabbed it from Yair Lapid, because Yair Lapid was, and I think this was the greatest motivation of Mofaz to delay the elections or to have the elections on time was Yair Lapid, because he kept grabbing more and more voters from Kadima. And actually, Yair Lapid said today in a lecture that he is left the only central party in Israel, which right now seems quite true.
Do you think, though, that these two changes will be made? You said there's agreement, there's consensus among the population, but that doesn't necessarily result in legislation.
I fully agree with you. I think that there is another reason. Since there is no lost trust between Likud and Kadima, and they know that in the future they may need Shas and the Ashkenazi Yadut HaTorah, I'm not sure if they will be, and since they don't trust the other party that will not take advantage of it, I think that they will, at the end of the day, they will find some compromise, a wishy-washy kind of middle way that the Orthodox will be able to live with. So, and as far as the amending the electoral law, they may succeed in making some changes, but my guess is that they will form another committee that will sit for 3, 4, 5 years to discuss, because they say they will argue that this is a heavy matter that should be brought to the public opinion and wait until the next elections and then, of course, reopen it. So I believe that they were cynically looking for something so they would be able to say, you know, it's not just an opportunistic move. It's not that we are afraid of elections. It is on the merits.
Okay, thank you very much.
Do we have another question? Yeah?
Yeah, Laura?
Yeah,
Laura, Jim Klochnik.
Hi, Jim. Actually, let me just take a moment to introduce people on the phone. This is Jim Klochnik, who is the new chair of Americans for Peace Now. We're very excited to be working for him. So, I'm sorry, Jim, go ahead. What's your question?
All right. Well, with that introduction, I better not screw up a question. Akiva, I think all of us on this call are very sensitive to Supreme Court issues, both here and in Israel. Could you explain to us in more detail this proposal to have the Knesset be able to overrule the Israeli Supreme Court, where that stands at this point, what the process might be, so we can track it? And obviously it's a red line that I think we'd all be concerned about on both sides of the ocean.
Yeah. Well, actually, this is not completely an original idea. A few years ago, the same Yaakov Ne'eman, who is now the Minister of Justice, was heading a committee that was looking at some kind of new balance of power between the legislators and the Supreme Court. Since, as you know, we don't have a complete constitution, there was a feeling even amongst, and you can even read some articles in Haaretz of professors of law who argued that this is not such a bad idea. Since we don't have, as I said, a constitution, the Supreme Court in Israel has too much power and is interfering in political matters. So the idea, the original idea was that 70 members out of 120 will be able to overrule a ruling of the Supreme Court by amending the law or taking a 65 majority, which is not easy. I mean, 70, now with 94, it's a new ball game. But even now, I'm not sure how many members of Kadima will raise their hands in favor of overruling the Supreme Court ruling about the illegal outposts. But what they can do, and there is a bill on the table, what they can do is, like in the case of Migron and the Ulpana, say, pass a bill that suggests that if the Palestinians, the owners, didn't come up with, didn't appeal and come up with documents to prove that they are the owners in the last 4 years, they will get some financial compensation, but they will not get their land back. It seems, as I said before, that there will be a 65 majority in the Knesset, and the question is whether Kadima, or the vast majority of the 28 members of Kadima, will be willing to turn a blind eye to this, and even, you know, if they can, they don't need to vote in favor, most of them, they can pass this bill.
Okay. Listen, I just want to say that I second Laura's comments about Akiva's book, Lords of the Land. Those who have not read it should read it so you have a real definitive understanding of what's happened with the settlements and occupation. And also that Americans for Peace now has a feature called News Nosh, where you can follow Akiva's commentary from week to week, and I would recommend that to anybody. And that's my paid advertisement. So.
And I didn't pay you for that.
I know you didn't, but I really encourage everybody to follow what you have to say.
Thank you so much,
Jim, and congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you, Jim.
We have
another question.
Gregory Law.
Yes,
from Boston, Jeffrey Lewis.
Okay, so it's going to be Jeffrey Lewis and then whoever the female voice was, because I want to get a woman in there, and then somebody Lowell, I think I heard. So in that order. Go ahead.
Nancy okay. Bernstein, yeah.
Yes.
Nancy, go ahead. You go first.
Can I join the lineup? Can I join the lineup? This is Ava in San Francisco.
All right, Ava, you're fourth. So either Nancy or Jeffrey, go ahead.
All right, I'll go ahead. I just have a question. Some people felt that the coalition, this new creation, meant that an attack on Iran would be imminent. So I just wanted to hear what your thoughts about that are.
In this case, I'd be very careful. To start with, again, warning you that in Israel, everything, never say never. So we have to be, but Mufaz was on record criticizing Netanyahu's policy on Iran, and first and foremost, his open conflict and criticism of the American policy. And he was very clear when he spoke about the need to coordinate and cooperate the Israeli policy with the United States, and not even to think about striking Iran without an approval from the United States. Now, I believe that Netanyahu will not do this before the American elections, and if Obama is reelected, I think that he will be very careful, Netanyahu, not to provoke a second-term president, not so much because of Iran, more because of the Palestinian track, because he knows that what he needs in the next year and a half until the elections is quiet between him and the United States. In the Likud, they remember what them in the 92 and in 99. 92 to Shamir, 99 to Netanyahu, when the Israeli public was very unhappy with the showdown between Shamir and Bush Sr., and then between Netanyahu and Clinton. So it's interesting that it happened with both a Republican and Democratic administration. So I don't think that Netanyahu, even though he has got a year and a half is not very long. I mean, in 6 months, he will need to start his campaign. So what he needs now is quiet. He knows that 65% of the Israeli public, according to the polls, are against striking Iran because of the price that Israel will have to pay, because most people realize that the way the Iranians will, that they will not retaliate with flowers.
Thank you.
Thanks, Akiva. Okay, thanks.
Hello. Hi. Akiva, it's Jeffrey Lewis. First of all, thanks to APN for having the call. This is very informative. I wanted to just, and I do hope you're right, by the way, that the Obama administration would speak out around the effort to overrule Supreme Court decisions through legislation, but I'm concerned that the timidity of the administration, particularly in an election year, might prevent that and might, in fact, be the reason for the timing of the effort. But I'll just say that and move on to the question. I was in Israel about a month ago and, to my great surprise, spoke with a number of people who have been very active in efforts to create a resolution of the conflict. When they told me that Mofaz had some particularly positive views toward the Palestinian-Israeli conflict and could be counted on possibly to do some good things. So in an optimistic tone, am I smoking something I shouldn't be smoking, or is there really the possibility that he will again do something that is unexpected in that arena?
You know, I asked the same question, you won't believe it, but I asked this yesterday. I asked Tzipi Livni. I said, perhaps something we don't know. Perhaps Netanyahu wants to make a dramatic move vis-a-vis the Palestinian, and he has a deal with Mufar that we don't know yet. You know what she answered me? She said, you know, you talk like a battered woman that believes that her husband will stop beating her. You know, and she goes back home. And she gets beaten again and again. And this is how I feel about Netanyahu. I'm not talking about Mufaz. Perhaps Mufaz has good intentions, but it's not important because he's not a prime minister. He's not even a minister of defense or the foreign minister. He will be sitting in the government next to Lieberman and Ehud Barak, which is, in my view, worse than one. If you wonder why, I think that people don't have any expectations from Lieberman, but they say to themselves, if Barak is there, perhaps there is something we don't know. With Lieberman, what you see is what you get. So I know. I met with Mufaz. He spent a long time trying to convince me that his plan is the best plan in town. But I remember I was on a panel with him a few years ago in Paris with the former Minister of Foreign Affairs of Spain, Moratinos, when Mufaz was explaining his plan, and what Moratinos said is something that I will not forget. He said, you know, Mr. Mufaz, I can offer you so many plans, but the problem is not the shortage of plans, but a shortage of political will. And I don't see the political will in Israel. I mean, the political will of Prime Minister Netanyahu. and with all due respect, and I don't have respect to Mofaz, I don't see he is going to put his foot down.
Question from Gregory Law.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
After 50 minutes of this discussion, I have to say that I'm more mystified than I was at the beginning by the answer that Laura asked at the very beginning. Why did he agree to join the government? What is he getting out of it?
Well, the answer is very simple. He looked at the polls and he realized that he is going to be remembered in history as breaking all the records of bringing down a party from 28 seats in the Knesset to single digits. So if you were at his place, you can get another year and a half. And actually, most of his colleagues in Kadima realized that that going for elections in September is suicidal for them personally. So I know it's hard to believe that this is, a cynical, opportunistic way of thinking. But, this is how politicians think. They think in terms of a year, year and a half, 2 years. So who knows what will happen in November 2013. But he knew what's going to happen in September 2012. So if you were in his place, what would you do?
So the problem is the Israeli public more than anything else.
Oh, I fully agree. You know, there was an Israeli politician who said, he suggested that we have to change the public rather than the leaders. Sometimes
why
I agree
are people
with
laughing?
Why? Because this is what's left.
Do we have any more questions? We have about 5 more minutes.
Yes.
I had a question.
Excuse me. I was in line. This is Eva in San Francisco.
Yeah, Eva, I think you're next.
Right. Thank you. Thank you so much, Akiva, for spending your time with us. It's very important. I'm very active at J Street. And one of the things, of course, we do very much is influencing or trying to influence the American government. So my question to you is, while I see a good number of the pitfalls and the problems, what would you suggest for American Jewry to focus on, either or both on the Israeli public, as I know they need to be mobilized, and secondly, vis-a-vis our administration? And thanks so much for your answer.
Thank you for this question. What I would like to see, and I'm not sure if it makes sense what I'm saying, but in the next few months, since it's very clear to me, according to the polls, I just saw the last poll of the American Jewish Committee, that that Obama's policy of pandering to the Likud and to Netanyahu doesn't bring him votes, because the people who are in favor of the settlement policy and support Netanyahu, most of them will not vote for him anyway. And as I say, only 6% of the Jewish community, and I think I'm talking now to 5% out of those 6, care about Israel. That Israel is the number one on their agenda. So what you should tell Obama is make it clear to him that he doesn't gain anything from turning a blind eye to the crimes that this government is doing. And it's criminal what they're doing by robbing lands of individual Palestinians, let alone what they call state land. But
right.
Migron and the Ulpana is clearly, according to the Supreme Court, not only the Supreme Court, to the Attorney General of Israel, who admitted to the Supreme Court that it's under police investigation. that it is private land, as it was never approved by the civil administration or by the Minister of Defense or the military commander of the West Bank. They didn't miss any violation of the what's called the law in the West Bank. So I would send a clear message to Obama that you expect him to make it clear to the Israeli government that enough is enough. I would even, you know, if I was an American, I would sign a petition and tell him that I'm not going to vote for him if he keeps doing this, because what he's doing, he's undermining the future of my country, of Israel, that all of you are here on the on this conference call because you care about. And what he's doing is there is nothing, has nothing to do with the well-being of Israel, the future of Israel as a Jewish and democratic state. And, you know, I appreciate so much what Bush Sr. did in 92 when he told clearly, Shamir, you have to choose between settlements and the $10 billion of loan guarantees. It was before, it was a few months before the elections. And yes, some people say, and he lost the elections. I'm not sure if this is the reason. But still, I am so disappointed. If I look back at his speech in Cairo, and now I see how he ignores the expansion of settlements and whatever Israel is doing, pay some lip service and that's it. So if I was Netanyahu, you know, Netanyahu is very proud of his ability to twist Obama's arms. So it's if I was an American Jew who cares about Israel, I would take the opportunity that Obama needs my vote now and need my $10 and tell him what I would like him to do right now. Maybe I'm naive, maybe I am a little romantic, but honestly, this is how I feel.
Right. Thank you so much.
Hello,
in particular,
my name is Evelyn Korosh.
Excuse me, may I just finish what I'm saying?
I apologize. I'm sorry.
We're exactly at this point, we are launching a big election push for us, J Street, to help get the votes out and to get people to vote for Obama. So this fits right in, and I hope that I can communicate this.
So don't give it for free.
No. No, thank you.
Okay, next question, go ahead.
Yes, I don't know if I was next. My Evelyn Korosh, I wanted to thank you so much, Akiva. What you just said was so relevant, and gay Americans have pushed Obama to do the right thing on that aspect, as we know. And I believe that thank you, J Street, so much. Thank you, APN. I think that's a very important answer, exactly what Akiva said, and it's got to be done. He's got to be pushed because he's a reasonable and intelligent man. He can't not see this.
All right, so I'm just going to intervene for a moment as a moderator. Akiva, I don't know if you have, that didn't sound like a question. As we get to 3 o'clock, we're going to wrap this up. I want to thank Akiva. I do just want to take a moment to note that APN is a nonpartisan organization, a 501c3. Appreciate everything everybody's saying here. We are nonpartisan. I would encourage people to check out the APN website for activism as well, www.peacenow.org, in terms of interacting with Congress and with the administration. And in this election cycle, we're very active, but again, nonpartisan. Akiva, you've been terrific. I appreciate it so much. I would encourage people to read Akiva's work online in Haaretz and look for the book, Lords of the Land. And please stay tuned in your email inbox for future briefing calls and other similar opportunities. So with that, I think we'll end the call. Thank you so much, Akiva, and thanks to everybody who joined us.
Thank you. Thank you, Laura, for moderating it, and hope that next time I will be more optimistic.
Absolutely. We all hope so.
Okay.
All right.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.